And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
Welcome, everyone. All right. Welcome back to Virgin Most Powerful Apologetic Dojo, where the rubber of catechesis meets the road of everyday life. I'm Gary Matuta, and welcome, and thank you for listening. That's funny. I didn't get the video call, so I thought maybe you would be blessed today by not seeing me on the live stream, so I might as well just give the shout-out right now. Hello, everybody watching on live stream on Facebook and also YouTube. It's great to see you, and I hope you're set for a great show, because we are going to have a tremendous show, because Master Apologist Carlo Broussard is coming back to the dojo. He's going to be our guest sensei for today, I guess you could say. And we're going to talk about this whole idea of whether scientific knowledge, is that the only way that we can get true information about the world? I mean, there are a lot of people who believe so. And because of it, they say, well, since we can't scientifically prove the existence of God or the soul or things like that, then why should I believe it? Right? It's not solid. It's not true. So Carlo Broussard's going to come, and he's going to tear that fallacy to pieces. So if you know somebody, perhaps, that is a skeptic that who believes that, you know, unless it's scientifically proven, it doesn't exist, you'll definitely want to hear this show. And we're also going to do our Finding the Fallacy, and the Finding the Fallacy for today is the Appeal to Emotion. That will be fun. And also, the Meet the Early Church Father today is Julian of Eklanum. A very interesting early father. To tell you the truth, I love these exercises. First, it kind of keeps me up to date on and remembering all these different fallacies and stuff. But also, we run into early church fathers that I never heard of before. And to tell you the truth, I never heard of Julian, or at least I don't think I've ever ran across Julian's name in my studies. So we're both going to learn about Julian today. And as always, you are part of the program. So please, if you have a question, especially for Carlo Broussard, Master Apologist from Catholic Answers, give us a call, 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. I'm sure he will take any question, I'm sure. And he'll do a fantastic job. And also, if you have any questions that you really want on the air, but maybe you're listening to this as a podcast or something like that, and you obviously can't call in live, shoot us an email at questions@handsonapologetics.com. And I can't guarantee it'll be read on the air, but I will try to answer it. You can't ask for anything more than that. And also, I want to give a heads up for next couple of shows we're going to have. Like I said, this week has been awesome. We've had Rod Bennett Monday talking about the apostasy that was, and we had Steve Weidenkopf talking about the Crusades Tuesday. Today we have the great Master Apologist Carlo Broussard into the dojo. Tomorrow, we're going to switch gears a little bit, because the Feast of the Immaculate Conception is coming on. And we want to be prepared for the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. The doctrine is so misunderstood by non-Catholics, and many Protestants believe that not only is the Immaculate Conception of Mary not supported by Scripture, but actually goes against some Scriptures. And in previous episodes, we looked at some of those texts and kind of shown how those texts absolutely do not speak against the Immaculate Conception. But tomorrow's show, I'm going to get into the biblical roots of that doctrine, and it's going to be a ton of fun. I can't wait. So Immaculate Conception coming up Thursday. Don't want to miss it. And then Friday, we're going to have the guy who started it all in terms of the new apologetics movement. Carl Keating is coming into the dojo. And, you know, I met Carl way, way back, just when I started getting into apologetics, early 90s. I know Terry Barber knew him even before then, but Carl was instrumental in me getting involved, and actually he helped me start a nonprofit ministry for a while, 401c3. And he's just been kind of a guy I looked up to, and has supported me over the years, and I've tried to support him. And he's going to come into the dojo. We're going to reminisce about the Wild West days back modern apologetics movement was just getting off the ground. So Friday, you don't want to miss Friday's show either. You don't want to miss any of our shows, really. I mean, come on. This is our workout routine. This is sharpen our minds and become sharp swords for our Lord, right? Help people to know and love Jesus more, right? And it is always, you know, please support Virgin Most Powerful Radio, because it's through your support that they're able to bring programs like Hands-On Apologetics, like Jesus 911, the Terry and Jesse Show. And so we can't do this without your help. And so thank you so much for your prayers. Again, thank you for sharing us on social media. Let's try to get some more subscribers, get better well known, because the more you like, the more you subscribe, the higher up in the search engines we go, and the higher up in the search engines, the more people hear these programs and can be helped by it. Because let's face it, the world is dying for the lack of knowledge of Jesus. So let's do our best. And thank you for your contributions, your financial offerings as well. Okay, so without further ado, why don't we jump into our dojo exercises? Let's get the brain functioning properly and sharply to discern when bad arguments come. By the way, that's why we do Finding the Fallacy, because the Catholic Church teaches the truth, the fullness of the truth, and there is no way you can prove validly that something which is true to be false. There has to be a problem with the argument against it. And so by learning fallacies, we're able to more accurately spot where those problems are. So today's fallacy is the appeal to emotion. The appeal to emotion, or argumentum ad passionones, the argument from passion. It's a logical fallacy. This one's kind of an umbrella term. You could fit a whole bunch of other things in there, like emotions, appeal to virtue, appeal to sadness, appeal to prejudice, you know, those type of things. And this, I think, is on the outer edge of fallacies, informal fallacies, because in a way, it's almost partly propaganda. Because what propaganda tries to do is sneak in under our radar screen. And rather than pose a logical argument or demonstration to accept or believe something, it just manipulates us, okay? So the appeal to emotion kind of does the same thing. This logical fallacy is basically the manipulation of the recipient's emotions in order to win an argument instead of giving factual evidence, okay? Now, I'm sure everybody here, I'm looking over at the dojo section, I'm sure you could think of a lot of examples where we are, our emotions are manipulated to accept, believe, or buy something instead of actual rational reasons are given. And for example, for the children, that was a very popular political thing, that we should support this program for the children, for their benefits. Okay, so that's the appeal to emotion. Meet the early church father for today is Julian of Eclanum, who lived roughly about 454 AD, when Pope Zosimus promulgated his decision against Pelagianism in 418. A letter went out to all the bishops of the world requiring their assent in the matter. Now, Pelagianism is this belief that that Adam didn't leave us original sin, that he gave a bad example, so we could be good, supernaturally good, without God's grace. Julian, headed along with 18 other bishops, refused to sign on to this declaration. And he kind of assumed the leadership of the Pelagian party. He was expelled from his see by Pope Zosimus and was exiled by civil authorities. Basically, he kind of like spearheads the whole Pelagian movement, which, of course, was roughly around the time of St. Augustine, the doctor of the church, the doctor of grace. And so Julian of Eclanum, we have some writings from him, from Pelagian, heretical perspective, including some in which he interacts with some of St. Augustine's writings. Okay, so it's really through him this whole heresy of Pelagianism becomes a well-developed system. And it's, like I said, it's largely through him and a few other people that it kind of continued and spread. And ultimately, the truth wins out. Kind of like what we were talking about with finding the fallacy. You can't disprove a truth. A truth is true no matter what. And so truth wins out. Pelagianism is condemned roundly. And therefore, you know, Julian is relegated to the trash heap of heretical people in history. Hence, the fact that before I got prepared for today's show, I don't even remember hearing of Julian of Eklanum before. But that's a good lesson for all of us. You know, let's stay orthodox. Let's stay with the church, because otherwise, no matter smart you are or how great you think you are, ultimately, you know, heresies die and crumble. And that's the case with Julian. Usually I quote a few things from early church father, but quite frankly, the stuff we have from Julian is all heretical, so it's not very helpful as far as understanding what the beliefs of the early church were. It's helpful for Pelagianism, but quite frankly, for hands-on apologetics, that's not really important. All right, gang. So, hey, stay tuned. Coming up on the other side of the break, we have the great master apologist, Carlo Broussard, in the wings, ready to be our guest sensei today. You do not want to miss it. Stay tuned.
This is Terry Barber inviting you to the upcoming Spiritual Warfare Conference, January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel in downtown Covina. If you go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org, you can join us with that, or call us at 877-526-2151. Jesse Romero will be there, Father Wolfgang will be there, and our very own Matt Arnold will be there, and I'll be the MC. Don't miss out on this wonderful event, January 11th and 12th.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. We desperately need to fix the bugs, so you can listen live on our app or YouTube without any glitches. Plus, meet traditional broadcast standards in order to provide our exclusive programming to Catholic radio stations around the country and around the world, absolutely free of charge. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. In the lineup on the bullpen, coming out of the bullpen, we have great master apologist and just all-around great guy, Carlo Broussard, who's a native of Louisiana and left a promising musical career, devoted his life, basically his full-time work, to Catholic apologetics. And for more than a decade, he's traveled around the country teaching apologetics, Bible studies, theology, philosophy. Carlo has also published tons of articles on a variety of subjects in Catholic Answers magazine. He's also a regular guest on Catholic Answers Live, and he does a lot of blogging on Catholic.com. Holds an undergraduate and graduate degree in theology from Catholic Distance University and Augustine Institute. And he's currently working on his master's in philosophy at Holy Apostles College and Seminary. He's been an apprentice to author and theologian Father Robert Spitzer, who we had on a little over a week ago from the Magis Center of Faith and Reason. Carlo, welcome to Hands on Apologetics.
Hey, Gary. Thanks for having me, brother. It's always great to be on with you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's great to have you back in the dojo, you know, showing us these apologetics moves. Yes. You know, it says a musical career. Did you play an instrument? Were you a singer?
Yeah, I played the Cajun accordion.
Oh, wow.
For many of your listeners, they might not know quite what that is. It's, you know, and so you can Google it and look up Cajun music. And so there's kind of the older, you know, there's the older folk traditional type Cajun music. It's very similar to zydeco music. Some of the listeners might be familiar with that.
Okay.
But when I started out, when I was about 13, I was playing in the bars, had my own band, and making a little money. So, you know, other 13-year-olds were cutting grass. I was playing in the bars, playing music, man.
Wow.
So I played the accordion and sang in my band, recorded my first album at 13, my second album at 16. And then music started progressing, more rock and roll type stuff with the accordion, kind of a genre of a mix between traditional Cajun, zydeco, and rock and roll. And started playing in the nightclubs and was trying to make it a career, man, because in southern Louisiana, there's a market for that. And then there are record labels and organizations that will sort of be an agent for Cajun musicians to try and book them, booking agents to travel throughout the world and promote the Cajun culture. So that's what I was pursuing all the way until I was about 20 years old. And then I gave it all up to pursue theology and philosophy and study apologetics. When I was about 18, I heard the conversion story of my boss here at Catholic Answers, Tim Staples, and that lit the fire, Gary. And I said, I want to do what he does. And so I gave up music and started pursuing that. And so here I am, man, 17 so years later, living the dream.
Yeah, now you're an apologist rock star, you know, it's just changing from one to another. At least you are in my book, certainly.
Star status. Well, thank you. You're very kind, my friend.
Well, Carlo, you know, like I started the program, I mentioned there's a lot of people out there that think that our only reliable information we have about anything is scientific information. So if it can't be demonstrated and repeated, it's false. It's not reliable.
Right.
That's called scientism, right?
Right. Yeah. So it's sort of an over exaltation of science, right? It's sort of exalting science to such a degree that it's excluding any other sources of knowledge about reality. So it's basically saying science is the only source of genuine knowledge. Scientific knowledge is the only real knowledge, right? And this is sort of the, you know, Gary, I like to say, as sola scriptura is sort of the pillar and foundation of Protestantism, scientism is sort of the pillar and foundation of modern new atheism. Like, for example, in a 2013 Cambridge Union Society debate with Rowan Williams, the former Archbishop of Canterbury, popular atheist Richard Dawkins claimed that religion is a betrayal of the intellect, right? And he asserted that to appeal to God in order to explain the universe is a phony substitute for an explanation and peddles false explanations where real explanations could have been offered. And the assumption being that the real explanations are scientific explanations. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, how do we respond to this? And so what I do in my book, Gary, and Prepare the Way, I offer a few strategies to coach the reader in how to overcome this obstacle, whether for yourself or you're trying to help somebody else overcome this obstacle of scientism. And this is an important obstacle to overcome, Gary, because if scientism is the way in which somebody is thinking about the world, they're not going to be open to the philosophical evidence for God's existence. Right. Nor will they be open to any sort of evidence, historical evidence, that God has revealed himself through Jesus Christ. So this is like square one. We're trying to get straight which tools we need to be using in order to come to know what is real, to come to know reality, to come to know truth. So here's one strategy that we can employ, Gary. We can show that scientism is actually self-refuting, all right? And here's how we can do that. Take the statement of scientism itself. Scientific knowledge is the only legitimate form or real form of knowledge. Well, that statement itself, Gary, is not scientific knowledge. And here's how we can illustrate that. So I would simply ask you, Gary, well, which scientific experiment did you perform in order to come to know the truth value of this belief itself?
Right, right.
And you kind of see the absurdity. There's no answer, right? Because you didn't. There's no scientific experiment that you can perform. You can't look through a microscope. You can't, you know, construct a hypothesis and repeat experiments in order to get empirical data. Or I might even ask this question. What's the mathematical formula that captures the quantitative dimension of the truth value of this statement? So whenever you ask these questions, you're able to show the absurdity of thinking that the knowledge of this belief or this sort of knowledge, that scientific knowledge is the only real form of knowledge, you see the absurdity of saying that's scientific knowledge. So if it's not scientific knowledge, well, then according to the principle of scientism itself, it's not real knowledge.
So the
believer in scientism, I like to say this, the believer in scientism, for the old rock and roll, classic rock and roll fans, he's asking us to get on his magic carpet ride, only to pull the carpet out from underneath our feet once we get on, right?
Right.
So in philosophy, we would say this belief of scientism is self-referentially incoherent. And I think we can make it even clearer, Gary, by putting it in a syllogistic form, right? And so we could say premise one, whatever knowledge is not scientific knowledge is not real knowledge. Premise two, scientism itself is not scientific knowledge. Therefore, conclusion, scientism itself is not real knowledge.
Yeah.
So the very belief itself, in as much as you assert it, you necessarily undermine it. You necessarily refute it because it's not the product of scientific inquiry. Now, there's another way, I think, Gary, in which, if I may go on, just if I'm going overboard here, just cut me off, you know?
Oh, no. Keep going. You're the sensei. You're in control.
There's another way in which we can show how scientism is self-refuting, or at least that scientism actually undermines the scientific enterprise itself as a rational form of inquiry. So think about this. In order to do the work of science, in order for scientific inquiry to even get off the ground, and of course I'm speaking of scientific inquiry in the modern sense, not in the traditional sense of Aristotle, where science includes all knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. So in order for scientific inquiry to even get off the ground, there are certain presuppositions, certain assumptions that must be made. Like, for example, there's a world outside of the mind for me to actually go and observe and run tests on for empirical verification, okay?
Yeah.
I have to make the assumption that the world outside of my mind is actually intelligible and subject to being known by my mind, by my intellect. So I'm assuming that there's a connection between the intelligibility of the world and my intellect's capability to uncover that intelligibility. I assume that relationship. I assume that the conformity is even possible, the conformity of the mind to that which is intelligibly in the world, right? But notice, Gary, that none of these assumptions that are necessary for science to even do its work are the product of the modern methods of scientific inquiry.
Right.
These are philosophical assumptions. Right. So think about this. If the assumptions of science are not the product of scientific inquiry, well, then according to scientism, they're not real knowledge. But if the assumptions of modern science are not real knowledge, well, then the scientific enterprise itself cannot give us real knowledge. So do you see how scientism, and as much as it says science is the only genuine source of real knowledge, actually undermines the scientific enterprise itself, which ought to be an indication to us, Gary, that scientism is not a good philosophical worldview because we have to reject science itself. And I don't think any credible person wants to do that.
And then you have no credible knowledge whatsoever, because then neither science nor things outside of science are reliable knowledge.
That's a good point, Gary. That's a good point, because not only have you initially rejected philosophical inquiry into Comington as a legitimate form of knowledge, but now you've undermined modern science as a legitimate form of knowledge. So now you're left with no legitimate form of knowledge. So the knowledge enterprise itself is undermined. So that's a very good point. I actually never considered that and took it to its logical conclusion. So I'm glad you shared that with me.
Yes, it's kind of like the ultimate nuclear weapon. It just destroys everything.
it destroys everything. That's right. And you know, Gary, here's another way I think we can refute. So notice what we've done. Inasmuch as we've refuted the proposition that scientific knowledge is the only real form of knowledge, we've necessarily proven the opposite to be true, that scientific knowledge is not the only real form of knowledge, which allows for philosophical knowledge to be a legitimate form of knowledge, right? So we've proven the opposite to be true. And put it in a positive way, we could say philosophical knowledge is a legitimate form of knowledge. Now, here's another way do this.
Carlo, because we're coming up on the next break. I don't want you to rush through this because this is gold.
Sure.
I mean, this is really, really solid stuff. So, you know, before you start that point, maybe on the other side of the break, let's kind of recap what we said, and then I'd like you to run with it, okay? Because you're the guest sensei. You're in charge, okay? All right, everybody, on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about scientism, why it's foolish, and it's basically self-destructive. So stay tuned for more Carlo Broussard after this.
Matthew Arnold here, encouraging you to go to vmpr.org to register for our upcoming Spiritual Warfare Conference this January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina. Father Wolfgang will be speaking along with Jesse Romero, Terry Barber as MC, and yours truly, talking about spiritual warfare and the family. Protect your family now. Go to vmp.org and register for this conference. Don't miss it.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. We desperately need to fix the bugs so you can listen live on our app or YouTube without any glitches. Plus, meet traditional broadcast standards in order to provide our exclusive programming to Catholic radio stations around the country and around the world, absolutely free of charge. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Matsuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. We got Master Apologist Carlo Broussard here in the dojo talking about whether or not science is our only way of knowing truth. And Carlo just downloaded a whole bunch of great information that scientists is self-refuting because you can't prove that science is the only means of knowledge. And then he gave a great explanation about how science presupposes things that it can't prove scientifically, right? In fact, Carlos, there's a whole bunch of them, not just the extramental existence of reality or that things outside of our minds are intelligible, but I mean logic, mathematics,
that's right.
All sorts of, or morals, that it's moral to give true results from tests rather than fudge them and make them
Beautiful.
Look like you proved something. I mean, you could just go
there
on.
There you go.
On, right? Yeah.
That's right. The whole enterprise, there's a whole, you know, there's 3/4 of the pie of knowledge.
Yeah.
That, you know, there's, you know, science is just one little piece of the pie, and there's the whole other pie from which that piece came, you know, that the piece presupposes. And the minute you restrict yourself to the modern methods of science as the only legitimate form of inquiry into truth, well, then you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to reject the whole enterprise itself because of all of those presupposed assumptions that are not the product of the methods of modern science.
Yeah, absolutely. Because science can't prove something it assumes.
That's right. That's right. Whenever, you know, if X presupposes Y, X cannot prove nor undermine Y, right? And you bring out a good point. You mentioned, Gary, and this is something I actually wanted to touch on before we went to the break. You brought out how the modern scientific inquiry presupposes that we ought to give true conclusions based upon the evidence rather than false conclusions, right? And it presupposes logic. And that actually touches on what I wanted to highlight, namely that we cannot not do philosophy. All right. It's interesting that the late Stephen Hawking, in his 2010 book, The Grand Design, tipped his hat at scientism in as much as he said, philosophy is dead. But this is one of those things. It's like it's basically a first principle of reason that you can't demonstrate that philosophical knowledge is true. The only way to show that philosophical knowledge is true is to defend it by trying to deny it, right? So if you say philosophy is dead, well, then you're necessarily doing philosophy in order to say philosophy is dead.
That's a good
you're
point.
You're making an assertion or a conclusion, but in order to assert that conclusion, you presuppose that which you're denying, namely philosophy as a legitimate form of knowledge. Because if you say philosophy is dead, you must be making that conclusion based on some reason. And in as much as you're logically reasoning from one premise to the conclusion, you're necessarily doing philosophy. So in order to deny philosophy, you must use philosophy. So that shows us that we're in the straitjacket of doing philosophy. We can't get out of it. And that's just simply because of the nature of the mind itself. So we cannot help but do philosophy. We're only going to do it well or poorly.
And that shows
that science, in that line, we could take that line of argumentation or that approach, and that shows that science cannot be, at least modern science, cannot be the only source of genuine knowledge.
Right. It's like you can't take a philosophy as a corpse and prove it's not respirating, you know, but because if you know, science can't prove that philosophy is dead because philosophy is an idea And so the only way you can prove philosophy is dead is to engage in philosophy, which, like you said, just totally undermines the whole enterprise.
Yeah,
oh, that's good. I never thought about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Something that is kind of like, you know, the first principle of knowledge, first principles of knowledge, like the principle of non-contradiction, for example, something cannot be and not be in the same respect, the same place and time. Well, in as much as you try to deny that first principle, the PNC, we'll just call it for short here. In as much as you try to deny it, like, for example, that principle can't be demonstrated. It doesn't rely on prior premises, the truth of prior premises, for its truth. It's a self-evident principle. But we can defend it by showing how the absurdity of denying it. So in as much as you deny it, you necessarily assume its truth value. Because if you deny and say PNC is false, you must intend to mean what that statement expresses, namely PNC is false, and not the opposite. So you're assuming that two contradictories cannot both be true at the same time. Similarly, yes, in order to deny that philosophy is a legitimate source of knowledge, you necessarily assume that it is a legitimate source of knowledge because you're using philosophy in order to deny the proposition, you see, that philosophy is a legitimate form of knowledge. And this leads me to my second strategy that I point out in the book, Gary. I thought I'd share this with you. It's important for our listeners to understand that it's scientism that drives much agnosticism, and, you know, of course, even atheism within contemporary culture in this way. You know, on Catholic Answers Live, when my colleague does his Why Are You, when my colleague Trent Horn does his Why Are You an Atheist broadcast, and then I do some shows on God's existence as well. Many times somebody will call in and say, well, I don't really know if God exists, or I believe God doesn't exist because I haven't seen the evidence for him. And then when you ask them the question, well, what type of evidence are you looking for? Well, hands down, they always say, well, you know, I don't see any scientific evidence for God. And so they're starting off on the assumption that the only evidence allowed in the court of law to prove that God exists is scientific evidence. So they've already embraced this view of scientism. And here's the way they're reasoning. Well, science can't detect God, and so therefore God must not exist. And the assumption, the hidden premise in there is that whatever science cannot detect does not exist. And that's scientism that's driving that, because they think, okay, well, scientism is the only legitimate form of knowledge. So anything outside the boundaries of what science can detect, well, that's just pure figment of the imagination. It's not real. But what this does, Gary, is it confuses methodology with ontology. Methodology is simply the method we use to discover reality, ontology being reality itself. So here's a great example, Gary, that philosopher Ed Fazer uses, and I think it illustrates the fallacy in this reasoning very clearly. So, for example, suppose we're going to go on Coronado Beach here in Southern Cal, right? And, Gary, we're setting out to find plastic cups on Coronado Beach. Well, at least you are, Gary. And so we get to the beach, and then you take out – well, actually, I am too. We're going to do this together. And you take out a metal detector, and you start going throughout the beach, and you know, it's making the sound. You're trying to find plastic cups. And we get to the end of the day, and you, Gary, say, well, I guess plastic cups don't exist on the beach because my metal detector didn't detect any plastic cups.
Right.
Now, that's an absurd conclusion. That the metal detector did not detect plastic cups says nothing whether or not the plastic cups exist. Why? Because the metal detector is restricted to detecting metallic elements, right? Only metal.
Right.
And so it's not going to detect anything outside the boundaries of metal because of the limitations of the detecting powers of the instrument itself.
Yeah,
now, if we want to find plastic cups on the beach, well, we're going to have to use some other tool, either a shovel or our hands or some plastic detecting instrument, right? And similarly, by way of analogy, science, like the metal detector, is restricted in what it can detect. It can only detect physical reality. So, of course, if there is something that is a part of reality that goes beyond the boundaries of physical reality, such as God, angels, the spiritual rational soul, etc., well, then of course science is not going to be able to detect such things because science
is only restricted to detecting physical reality. So here's how I would put it, Gary. That science cannot detect God or any other immaterial entity. It says nothing whether or not those things exist. It's simply a manifestation of the limitations of the detecting powers of the instrument of science itself. It's a manifestation of the limitations of the method, of the methodology, and it has no bearing on ontology itself, because there may very well be immaterial beings, entities, beyond the boundaries of physical reality that science simply cannot detect. So I think this is an important strategy to point out, and this is important for our agnostic friend who's like, oh, I don't have any evidence for God. Well, if you're only looking for the scientific evidence, well, then, yeah, I could see how you might come to that conclusion. But since scientific evidence is not the only kind of evidence that we can allow in the courtroom to prove God guilty of existing, right, we can use other type of evidence, namely philosophical evidence. Or you can even take another route and use historical evidence, the historicity of Jesus Christ and his claims to be God and his vindication of those claims through his resurrection.
Right. Yeah, very good. You know, it's strange that there's always this presumption in atheism that God is a thing in the universe, you know?
Right.
I don't know why. Probably because they're using their imagination. Their imagination's wedded to material stuff, so they picture God like Zeus up in the clouds or something like that.
Correct.
But
if such a being did exist, then we could employ the methods of modern science in principle to detect and observe, you know, and measure such an entity. And so, yeah, it's working on the flawed assumption of who and what God is. So basically, they're looking for a false deity. They're looking for a God that we do not believe in. Because the God of classical theism, as you hinted at, Gary, is a reality that is beyond physical reality. And not even beyond physical reality, but infinite being, right? So even outside the order of finite being itself. So of course we're not going to be able to reach such a being through the methods of modern science. We're going to have to employ other tools such as philosophy, which in light of the classical arguments for God's existence as typified in Aquinas' Five Ways and of course other great thinkers, we know we can come to know such a reality exists.
Right. I hear the music. Stay tuned, everybody. We're talking to Carlo Broussard about scientism. That great program. You don't want to miss a second. Stay tuned.
Hello, this is Terry Barber. I want to invite you to the Spiritual Warfare Conference coming January 11th and 12th. At the Sacred Heart Chapel. It's going to be fantastic. I want to encourage you to sign up by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. One of the speakers is sitting right next to me, Matthew Arnold. Matt, what are you going to be telling our folks about?
I'm going to tell them about my journey into the Catholic Church, because in my younger days, I was in the entertainment business. I was all involved with cult beliefs and practices like tarot cards and astrology and even channeling. And I had my own brush with the demonic.
Wow. Not only Matt, but Father Wolfgang from the Opus Angelorum, popular priest, he's welcome back. And our friend Jesse Romero, my partner on the Terry and Jesse Show, will be there. Don't miss it. Go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call us at 877-526-2151.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Matsuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And I know that on a live stream on YouTube, people are actually taking notes. They love the show. And don't worry about taking notes. Pick up a copy of Carlos's book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles, the God, the Gospel, and the Church through Catholic Answers Press. Just go to Catholic.com, hit the shop, and pick up a copy because he has it. It's a great book. It's very simply put, and it's a lot like how he's describing it now, just punch by punch, blow by blow, you know, how to dismantle these errors. So, since the methodology of science just isn't suited for detecting the existence of an infinite, unlimited God, but it probably could detect, right. I have a Zeus detector and detect where ambrosia is in the universe or something, if it was a thing in it. How else can we address the issue of scientism?
Yeah, well, one other strategy I employ in the book is to show that scientism, and this is yet another way in which it refutes itself in a way, is that it actually undermines the reality of the human mind itself, right? Hmm. So recall, scientism says, you know, basically that which it cannot detect is not real, okay? And that's sort of an effect of the scientism belief that scientific knowledge is the only real form of knowledge. So whatever science can detect, of course, is not going to be real knowledge about the objective world. So it's not objective reality. It's not real. It would just be restricted to the confines of the imagination or something. Well, guess what? The mind is not subject to empirical verification and is non-quantifiable. Okay, the mind itself, in as much as we reason through logic and et cetera, as we pointed out earlier, is beyond the boundaries of physical reality. It's not something that the mind can detect. Right. And so if the mind is not subject to empirical verification or is not subject to quantifiable if the mind is not quantifiably measurable, well, then according to scientism, it wouldn't be real, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if the mind itself is not real, well, then we can't even be asserting the belief of scientism itself, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, a Socratic question that I put forward in the book is, how can you argue for scientism when such argumentation presupposes the very thing that scientism logically denies? Namely, yeah. The mind. So scientism, as you said, I love that analogy, Gary. That was a great analogy of the nuclear explosion. It destroys everything, even the mind itself, which is what you need to be real in order to argue for scientism. Now, right. So far in the show, Gary, you know, I've been, you know, hammering on scientism, and I do not want our listeners to get the impression that I am trying to devalue modern science itself as a legitimate form of rational inquiry and coming to know about reality. What we're doing here is we're simply trying to put science in its proper place, which allows for other forms of inquiry into reality. And secondly, I do not want our listeners to think that science in no way can help us in our journey or in our rational inquiry into God's existence. Because earlier I said that science cannot detect God, and that is true. Nor can science prove that God exists like we could prove that God exists via philosophical investigation. But what science can do is that it can provide a certain empirical data that upon examination, when we begin to we're presented with empirical data that we look at with reason, and when we employ philosophical investigation, we come to a reasonable conclusion that God would exist. So in other words, right, contemporary science can provide us certain empirical data that could give plausibility to certain premises within a philosophical argument for God's existence. So, for example, you could look at, you know, the evidence from contemporary cosmology for an absolute beginning of time and physical reality. That's something Father Spitzer works on quite a bit, and some stuff I learned when I worked with Father Spitzer, namely the theorem or the proof of Bordovalenkin and Guth, right? Mm-hmm. This theorem that there would have to be an absolute beginning of time and physical reality, not only for our universe, but even the multiverse itself. So if that is true, and of course, anything that science gives us through scientific data, we take in a qualified sense, because we recognize the very nature of science being inductive, which means there could be new data to alter its current theories. But if we have good evidence, which I think we do, that there is an absolute beginning of time and physical reality of our universe or even the multiverse itself, well, then we could employ philosophy then and say, well, if the universe had a beginning, well, then it would need a cause outside of itself. Science tells us that we have a good high probability that the universe did begin to exist, and that's a reasonable conclusion based upon the method of science, and therefore philosophically we could conclude that there would be a transcending cause. Now, granted, that's not a philosophical or metaphysical demonstration as exemplified, I would say, in Aquinas' five ways, but this can help someone in their inquiry into the truth of God's existence. And this is how science can have a role to play. But notice, science is not proving God exists. Science is simply giving us empirical data of the beginning of time and physical reality. And then we employ philosophy to say, okay, well, what are the implications of that scientific truth? So that's one way in which science can have a role to play, a positive role to play, in the quest for God. It at least gives credence to theism as opposed to atheism. And then furthermore, as I point out in the book, Gary, you know, we could look at all of the fine-tuning of the various constants, universal constants, and the initial conditions of the Big Bang at the beginning of our universe. So the constants being these fixed numerical quantities, right, that sort of constitute certain scientific formula and control the very laws of nature itself. So just one example, you know, the values of the gravitational constant or the weak force constant, if that value varied by higher or lower by one part in 10 to the 50, so that's a decimal point, 49 zeros and a one, well, then our universe would have either exploded or collapsed in its initial expansion. And that's just one example of a variety of extremely fine-tuned, you know, numerical values of these constants that if they're off by just a minuscule amount, we wouldn't be here. And when you take all of those fine-tuning examples and put them together, that's what science can tell us. Science tells us that this universe and our universe is finely tuned for life to develop. But then we employ philosophy and say, okay, well, what are the implications of that? And then philosophy leads us to the reasonable conclusion of some sort of supercalculating intellect. Now, granted, that's not a demonstration. It doesn't prove God's existence, but it does give one good reason to believe that God exists. And that's a rational approach to God's existence. And so this is a way in which science can make a positive contribution to the quest for God. And for people who might not be philosophically inclined to work through the steps of Aquinas' five ways, say, this could be helpful for them because it's a start. It's a good start to begin thinking about, you know, these philosophical concepts. And I think that could actually lead into a more robust philosophical analysis. And that is, you know, Aquinas' five ways, one of which I give a version of in my book when I give you a step-by-step approach to philosophically reason through the evidence of existence itself, that things exist. And they're not nothing, and that being a starting point to leading us to the conclusion that there must exist some cause that's not caused to exist by anything outside of itself, but simply is existence itself, is being itself, and that reality we call God. Now, of course, I have to prove that, and I do so in the book. And I did, by no means did I do it here in just 60 seconds,
sure.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, yeah, we have about three more minutes. What if someone said, well, this fine-tuning stuff, that's just a brute fact? I mean, obviously, wouldn't even know about fine-tuning unless we existed, so the universe has to be fine-tuned. What would your response be to that?
Well, it's sort of, you know, the taxi cab, I once heard it put as a taxi cab fallacy. You know, it's kind of the idea, well, you know, you look for explanations for everything else in the universe, and then all of a sudden you get to these, you know, most fundamental aspects of the universe, and then all of a sudden you're getting out, so you're going to use the taxi to go all around the city, but, you know, and then all of a sudden you don't need it anymore, right? So that's sort of a general approach. But I think there's a more robust philosophical demonstration of why there cannot be brute facts, period. And this gets into the weeds of metaphysical thinking, of saying that, you know, you have sort of one approach of saying, well, everything needs an explanation. But then you sort of have a Thomistic approach in saying wherever there is being, there must be a reason why something has being rather than not have being. And that's either going to be within itself or from some cause outside of itself. And so whenever you employ that line of reasoning, you can show that there cannot be brute facts.
I never thought of applying it there. That's very good. You know, one analogy. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I cut you off. Please. I have an article at at Catholic.com where I address, can the universe be a brute fact? And they can just go to Catholic.com and then type that in. Go ahead.
Great. That was much more important than what I was going to say. I was just going to say one analogy I heard, which I thought was kind of cool, was if a guy was standing in front of a firing squad in front of 50 guys and they shoot and the bullets miss him but make a perfect outline of his body, you wouldn't just say, wow, that was lucky. You would say somebody bribed the shooters, right?
Right.
And it's kind of like that.
Philosophically, we are here and we observe the fine tuning. And so we're simply asking, what's the explanation? If you're willing to say there's no explanation, well, then I think you undermine even not reasoning itself. Because if that's the case, well, then your conclusion that there are brute facts is based upon no reason, in which case I don't have to accept it as a rational conclusion. You see?
So it
undermines the process of knowledge itself, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Carlo, hey, this is great as always. How can people get a hold of your material?
Yeah, well, they can go to Catholic.com, and then also they can go to my website, CarloBrusart.com, where it's sort of a single location of everything that I do at Catholic Answers.
Awesome. Well, thank you, my friend, for coming to the dojo and blowing up this wrong way of thinking.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. It was a pleasure and an honor, my friend. God bless you. I look forward to the next time.
All right. Well, take care. That was Carlo Brusart, and man, great stuff. I'm going to listen to this again as a podcast. As always, you know, keep us in your prayers. Keep us in your, share us on Facebook. It's time for the Terry and Jesse Show. And I have to shut down the Midwest Command Center right here. Turn off the lights to the dojo. And be prepared, because on your way is High Intensity Talk Radio.
Scripture tells us that David beat Goliath with a sling and five smooth stones. Funny, the rosary looks kind of like that. The rosary is a Catholic devotional prayer. A set of one Our Father followed by 10 Hail Marys is called a decade. You do 5 decades and you have a rosary. And for each decade, we meditate on a mystery from Jesus' life. So the prayers we're breathing in and out set the stage for an encounter with the Word of God. Do a quick search online for the mysteries of the rosary, which are different for each day of the week. What I really love about old-school Catholic devotionals like this is simplicity. I'll be honest, it's not always easy to pray or to lead my family in prayer. What do I do? What do I say? Rosary, problem solved. Look, every family's a mess in its own special way. Bring God into the mess. Your family's problems might be Goliaths. Maybe the solution's as simple as a sling and 5 smooth stones. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.